the reason to study what is called the Pearl River Delta. The Pearl is a river, you see it running here. And the delta consists of six urban conditions. Hong Kong, the most well known, and it ceased to be English a couple of months ago. Shenzhen, a special economic zone, which is actually designed by the Chinese as a kind of parasite to Hong Kong to exploit and extract its energy. A city called Dongguan, which is an enormous provincial city. Then an other older city called Guangzhou, or formerly Canton, which was a very famous city in the history of China. Then another special economic zone called Zhuhai. Very few people will have heard about it. And then the last remaining colony here, Macau, which is still Portuguese, but which will cease to be Portuguese by the year 2000. So what was interesting to us is to study this condition, because there were actually so many differences, and also because this, if you assemble all the inhabitants of the condition, it is now a 12 million people region, but the prediction is that in the year 2020 it will be a metropolis for 34 million people. Again, a scale that we don't know here. And then there, in our kind of first analysis, we discovered that this entire group or cluster of cities produces 500 square kilometers of urban system, substance every year. That is kind of urban substance bigger than the whole of Berlin, new and old, but it produces it every year. So you can kind of get a kind of sense of the incredible acceleration that is taking place here. We all think that we know Hong Kong, and we all think that Hong Kong is already a kind of fairly extreme place, although actually it is a number of islands and really only the coastline is developed. We all know the kind of the notorious images of Hong Kong in mind, but if we look at the statistics of Hong Kong, then actually we discover that it is a fairly stable condition, maybe to our own surprise, because it is a city that kind of over the 80s, 90s has kind of almost not grown in. So in that sense, Hong Kong, you could say, is in spite of some of its extreme configurations, a fairly traditional city. But if we go to Shenzhen, as I said, conceived by the Chinese as a special economic zone, which actually means that it's a kind of experimental laboratory where the market economy can be tested out on the scale of a city, which is a parasitic situation in the sense that it offers everything that Hong Kong offers except more cheaply, so that it drains kind of energy there. Then, and if you look at the statistics of Shenzhen, you kind of realize that actually there is an enormous movement from Hong Kong to Shenzhen, and that Shenzhen in, sorry for, I hope, yeah, Shenzhen is actually, compared to Hong Kong, a city of really miraculous growth, which in the 80s was a kind of mere fishing village, and which in 99 was already a city of over 1.5 million, in which it is important to know that the darker column is the column of legal inhabitants, and that the clear column is the column of unofficial inhabitants, so that there are two kinds of inhabitants, those who make the city and those who inhabit the city, and that already this kind of growth, I think in the recent memory, has never occurred in Europe. So you see that, and therefore, what is miraculous and kind of fascinating about Shenzhen is that anything you see there is not older than 10 years. So for instance, this housing project, but actually also the horizon is a kind of fresh horizon, a new horizon. It's a kind of 10-year old horizon and not older than it. And still, and you see that, for instance, kind of buildings in Shenzhen, even if they're kind of 10 years old, the pressure of the population and the pressure of urbanization is so phenomenal that this building, which started as a parking garage, has been kind of by sheer programmatic pressure being kind of developed and conquered as a kind of totally occupied building, which has at least 34 different tenants. And each tenant has the right to make an architectural sign of his existence, so that when we counted the kind of mutant architecture that was being produced there, we counted that this building has over 36 different curtain wall systems or kind of architectural fragments on it. So this kind of conversion, which was kind of going on almost every day, was only an extreme form of the intensity of development in such a city. Here, there's another kind of typical Shenzhen building, which is hugely monumental, of course, but where, for instance, the base was already being rebuilt, even though the building had never been finished, because it was decided that the original program, which was shoppings along the street, was not intense enough, so that this was already broken down, and instead of that, there was a kind of shopping center being built as a kind of accelerated version in the attempt to be ready when this building was ready. So already before, during construction, the conversion process is taking place. At the same time, we see unbelievably kind of glamorous and new architecture, but the illegal inhabitants of the city, of course, have to exist somewhere too. And here we see another kind of form of growth. These buildings were built as workers' housing, but actually the pressure became so enormous that, again, in the years after their completion, kind of layers and layers were architecture were being added on top of the workers' housing, but also in between the workers' housing, so that what actually started life as a series of separate apartments has become one single block of unbelievable density, where literally every surface is inhabited, and where if you multiply the ground on which the entire complex stands, you now have a kind of multiplication factor of about 8 full repetitions of the ground as inhabitable or more or less inhabitable form. So Shenzhen, just to give you a sense of what is possible in this part of China, these are the skyscrapers built in Shenzhen between 82 and 93. And we are now kind of in 93, the number was 450 skyscrapers in 10 years, and that kind of number has doubled since. So it's now 900 in the past few years. So a city that in 10 years built 900 skyscrapers obviously has to mean something, and that was what we wanted to find out. Here, an image of Shenzhen, where I think one of the interesting things is that what you see is always very rich. You always see mountains or nature, you always see rice fields, and you always see skyscrapers. It's not one single condition that dominates, but it's always all these conditions together. What it means, of course, is that architecture has an incredible value, or building has an incredible value, and it's not only, or maybe not at all, an aesthetic value, it's just a value in terms of market condition, which gives a kind of frenzied necessity to advertise, which also provokes kind of more gloomy versions, which is a local paper where there is a kind of page every day of poems about Shenzhen that can be quite depressed or quite shocked by what is going on. But the main part of the paper, the most important part of the paper, is like stock market tables, which give the fluctuating value of every building over every day. So that you can read the paper, you have the 450 or 900 skyscrapers, and you can see which one kind of increased in value, which depreciated, so that the whole stock market system has been kind of replaced by an assessment of architectural value, or at least building value, where you see only in the most extreme form, of course, the effect of on architecture of the embrace of the market economy. Now, and to some extent, we are, I think, are all in a similar position, although we may not know it to the same extent. One of the things we then theorized is that if there is a city, an urban condition, where that can produce 900 skyscrapers in 10 years, it also means that there must be a mutant figure, a theoretical figure. We've called that theoretical figure the Chinese architect, that has properties that we don't possess. Because if you assembled all the architects of Europe in one factory, I would guarantee you that they would be unable to produce 3 skyscrapers per year. And I think that the Chinese architect obviously works in a different way. And so we did some statistical research. And this figure gives you the number of architects per thousand of inhabitants. So you see that England has the most architects probably in the world. Next, very well supplied with architects, are Spain and France. So there are many architects in Europe, we all know that. Then slightly less is the United States. And China has extremely few architects per thousand people. So the architect in China is genuinely rare. There are whole sections of China where there is one architect per 6 million inhabitants. These columns kind of produce, give you the average that each of the architects in the different country constructs per year. And this column is kind of residential, and this column is total building, so residential plus housing. Then you see paradoxically that America, which has few architects, each architect produces a lot of architecture, that the UK is the lowest of production per architect, but that and that Germany is not doing badly, at least in the other category. That probably means shopping centers. And then we see that China, the average production per architect is unbelievably a multiple of all the others, which really means, and we calculated in terms of volume and found that the average Chinese architect constructs one 30-story building per year. And then we looked at the honorariums, and that was also interesting because I think Great Britain again came out almost on top. You can almost predict the kind of situation, the kind of as the market economy kicks in, the honorariums become lower, like you said, it's kind of somewhere in the middle. But by far the lowest honorarium and the least paid was the Chinese architect. So when we multiplied all these factors, like the rarity of the architect, the enormity of its production, and the lowness of the honorarium, we get a factor of efficiency, and we found that the Chinese architect is 10,000 times more efficient than his nearest competitor. And we actually found that it was true, because some of the most striking buildings in Shenzhen, when we went through the first we were naively looking for architectural offices, and then they said, well, there are no architectural offices, there are some architectural offices, but they produce very little architecture. Basically, most of this production is done by people secretly kind of in their kitchen, and some of the buildings were, for instance, done by two Chinese architects in 4 days in the kitchen on a Macintosh. And therefore, you could also say that Chinese architects are probably the kind of most modern architects in the sense that they have probably exploited the theoretical advantages of computerization, not in terms of spatial experiments, but actually in terms of spatial repetition and the kind of production of a repertoire which allows them to work at devilish speed. So this is this building that I was kind of mentioning, produced in 4 afternoons. And what is becoming interesting, of course, is that it is not necessarily kind of boring architecture, and that this was for a pharmaceutical company, and that actually it was quite a daring integration of art and architecture that they had been that was established there. So it's not unpretentious. Although there is a lot of repetition, and the repetition enabled certainly by the computer, there is also a lot of fight for originality, a lot of ambition even. And I think that what is maybe the most disconcerting aspect of this architecture that is being produced by so few in such quantities for so little money is, of course, that it is not very similar to architecture which you could see on the way to the airport in any contemporary urban condition. It could be Viennese, it could be German, it actually looks German, and it could be anything else. So Again, what was interesting for us is to document not only the urban condition that was changing in front of your very eyes, but also the status of all the known urban ingredients, but also the profession that produces them. This is a view of central Shenzhen. It's not La Défense, but it's quite similar. And of course, what is interesting about central Shenzhen is that there is no center, but actually there is a new a number of theme parks. One of them is kind of a partial reproduction of Europe. Here is the Athens. This is the kind of middle European section, which actually is fairly kind of fairly well represented. And which is again kind of used, and which clearly gives a kind of sense of centrality. And next door to this theme park is another theme park, which is called Splendid China, and which is a kind of reproduction of the best qualities of China at a kind of smaller scale, but even more kind of extensively part of the center, or tied together to this complex of two theme parks. There is a golf course, the downtown Shenzhen golf course. Now, when you look at this image, I want to ask you to make two comparisons. We all know the kind of the beautiful image of Central Park, an Arcadian condition that is surrounded by housing or by apartment buildings, in any case, surrounded by architecture. And we have all ingrained in our consciousness the beauty of this contrast between the vegetal and the mineral. That situation took at least, if you start with the kind of planning, probably 150 years to mature. Again, in this image, nothing is older than 10 years. Not the ground, not the skyline, not the wall of buildings. All produced in 10 years. And what is interesting is that where Central Park is in a way an ornament in the urban condition of Manhattan, this is the urban condition of Shenzhen, and actually used in a very intense way. The entire center is a 24-hour center. The golf courses are used 24 hours. They're used for deal making, and more, there is a kind of merging between housing and golf courses, or golf, or this kind of inhabited landscape is becoming the kind of urban medium that connects everything together. So instead of streets and plaza, you could say that in Shenzhen there's a kind of much more idyllic condition, namely everything is connected by golf courses on which people are golfing and on which children are playing. And I think that's and this is one of the kind of terms and one of the kind of mutations that we are analyzing. This image is, of course, an image which is partly photographic and partly computerized. And we all know that the famous computer program called Photoshop, which allows you to take nice things and to combine them in a single image from different sources. And which, as those of you who are literate computer know, is a kind of very smooth and easy operation. I think what is maybe the essence here is that the architectural and urbanistic production, instead of being the product of incredibly deep thinking or intellectual preparation or agonized weighing of different issues, is now becoming easy as Photoshop. You just like this and you like that, or a client wants this and a client wants that, and kind of through some kind of new medium, kind of cyberspace in a way, but actually now realized at the scale of the city, Photoshop seems as a kind of metaphor and as a kind of metaphor of what the architecture production is turning into, namely something almost thoughtless, almost mechanical, almost unlimited in terms of all the options that can be combined in a single image, the more crucial way of thinking of the city.